Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how a high-fat diet, which is the common American diet, promotes a major killer. Also, how one nutrient, easy to get, inexpensive, can boost the mitochondria function, and that is important if you want more energy, because we have a lot of fatigued Americans. And then we're going to examine how ice from a fast food restaurant, you know, the kind you put in your glass if you eat at one of those, has more bacteria than toilet water. Whoa. And plants in the office make workers happier and more productive. And also, how is your cell phone addiction as bad as many other addictions? I'll explain, Baylor University, and a lot more on health and healing. Then, I didn't have a chance yesterday, but today I'm going to give a overview commentary going into this time in our lives, how those of us who no longer align with the current, and I want to put that in parentheses, current, liberal or conservative values, which have been substantially corporatized. But we want to see change. We want to be a part of the solution. We don't want to sit around, complain and blame, point fingers. That's non-constructive. So I'm going to give the core progressive values and progressive actions, and then compare how both a current conservative or liberal would deal with a problem versus how a progressive would deal with it. I think you'll find that very important because it gives us something really concrete to think about if we want to start moving in that direction. I'm trying to get the 100 million Americans who claim that they are independent to actually self-actualize. Then I'm going to share a commentary by Jeffrey Sachs from the Boston Globe about American imperialism. And we're also going to look at Big Pharma is telling us we need to charge you thousands of dollars per drug per month because of all the money we spend on research. Well, most people accept that until someone did the research. And once this research was reported, the reality is Big Pharma is spending 1,900% more on marketing and sales than on research. Also today, we've been led to believe by the mainstream media, led by CNN. I don't know why anyone watches that or trusts anything by anyone on there, that you can get anything except biased and corporate news. But they'll tell you why GMOs are not a bad thing. They are. But they'll say, but all these studies, as of today, one of the most respected scientific medical journals in the world, PLOS One, quote, has determined that a large portion of studies on genetically modified crops were rife with conflicts of interest. 40% of 579 published articles were people doing the study actually were being paid by the company their salaries and bonuses. How can you possibly do a study that is not considered biased if you're being paid by a company for an outcome? So we'll get into that. And Donald Trump, following in the same footsteps of Dick Cheney, claims that torture works. He's sure of it. But does it? What does the actual science on torture show? And if someone will be good enough to send this audio clip today over to all the conservative media and simply ask them to listen, because all I'm going to do is share the actual scientific studies on torture. And I think they're not going to change their mind, but at least they'll know that there's something else up there. And the Obama administration gave us a Christmas gift. Under the cover of Christmas, Obama establishes controversial anti-propaganda agency. You heard me right. On Friday night, while everyone else was celebrating, Obama signed into law this Anti-Propaganda Agency Act. It is called the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act. That seems almost right out of Orwell's 1984. I'll explain why this is important, because now the government can officially go after any website or anyone writing anything on the web that they feel is propaganda. So, we'll expose it first, but where were all of our legislators who supported it? So we'll deal with that. So I also have some audio clips today, including we're going to take a look at reality check. The DEA is wrong about how cannabis oil should be classified. And then Jimmy Dore of the Young Turks gives Obama an earful. And then there's some people who are very famous and very powerful who are all quietly members of a company that's been given exclusive rights to deal for oil in Syria. And because Israel controls Golan Heights, but based upon all international law, they have no right to allow anyone to exploit any part of that land. Yet they're doing it. The media doesn't touch this. We will. And are we to assume that everything that we would know about Clinton and the email scandal is over behind us? Not at all. But why was it the entire mainstream media chose to look at who hacked it rather than the content of it? So we'll explore that as well. We can't get all this in, but we'll get a lot of it in. Let's begin. Most Americans consume a high saturated fat diet, or if they're eating other fats, it's generally from peanut oil, canola oil, corn oil. Most of these, certainly corn oil, genetically modified agents are in there, and these are not healthy. They cause a lot of inflammation in the body. Almost all the food that you eat in any restaurant has been prepared in unhealthy oils. And I just wanted to see how they were handling the oils and cooking on a very popular food program. This one was one where they showed the oil being really brought up to a high temperature, and then the food just put in there. Of course, what happens is, what would happen if you put your hand into boiling oil? You're going to completely scald it. You're going to destroy the tissue. So all of your antioxidants are destroyed. All your enzymes are destroyed. The phytonutrients are altered. The proteins are altered. In effect, you're getting a Frankenfood, whether it's fried chicken or French fries. Whatever they're doing in that oil is unhealthy. But it goes beyond that. And that is, the high-fat diets may promote the growth of tumors in the intestine by causing changes in the mitochondria and the microbial community, your gut bacteria. And that's demonstrated in a study published in the world's most prestigious journal, Nature, this week. So this association is seen with a genetic predisposition for intestinal cancer. And the findings suggest that dietary interventions designed to modulate an individual's microbiota may reduce the risk of colorectal development. So there's two ways of looking at this. One, all high-fat diets currently consumed as part of the standard American diet are unhealthy and can promote intestinal cancer. Secondly, but the good news, by stopping the high-fat diet and emphasizing good bacterial foods, probiotics and prebiotics, you can help prevent that. But healthy fats also help prevent cancer. Coconut oil, olive oil help prevent cancer. Flaxseed oil, hemp oil help prevent cancer. From the Jiangnan University in China, published in Journal of Food Science, resveratrol, that's the nutrient that you find in grapes, for example, can boost the energy in the body. what's called the mitochondria. Quote, supplementation with resveratrol, I'm suggesting 100 to 200 milligrams a day, stimulated mitochondrial biogenesis, that means rejuvenation, and restored mitochondrial function activities, end quote. So this was done in the School of Food Science and Technology at the university. Quote, these beneficial resveratrol-induced changes in the mitochondrial biogenesis are consistent with previous studies in which resveratrol increased the number of mitochondria, shifted the physiology, and so if you want more energy and you want healthier body, make sure you're getting grapes or resveratrol each day, and I would suggest once in the morning, 100 milligrams once in the evening. Franchises of McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken have been found to use ice that was found to contain up to 1,900% the amount of bacteria that is considered acceptable to drinking water. And the amount of bacteria in ice cubes used for carbonated beverages at one Kentucky Fried Chicken location was reportedly found to be 13 times, that's 1,300% higher than in toilet water in a lab test. According to the Wall Street Journal, Kentucky Fried Chicken issued a public apology following the report on this. So what is the takeaway message? How'd the bacteria get there? Well, the bacteria could have been in the water itself. After all, if you have polluted water and you simply freeze it, now you've got polluted ice. Secondly, it could have been in the container, in the ice machine itself. If it wasn't drained at night and disinfected and cleaned, then you're starting off with a medium that's going to just put bacteria all over that ice. Third, what if the scoop that they use, or their hands in many cases, in bars, they take ice and put it right in there frequently from their hand. And by the way, the one thing, if you should go into a bar for socializing and you have something to drink, never get it with lime or wedge of lime or orange, because that's not done in a kitchen. That's done by the bartender who's handling money and dirty rags, and which don't clean anything anyhow. And it's very contaminated. So the idea is, don't use any ice from any of these environments. Now, from Medical News Today, plants in the office make workers happier and more productive. Staff working in offices designed to be lean and devoid of greenery. Lean and devoid of greenery, that's not a happy place. But an environment where you're rich in plants is far more constructive to having people be productive and happier. And this was done at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands and University of Queensland in Australia and published in the Journal of Experimental Psychology. I think that in the future, we should look at habitats where you start off with a natural habitat to which you then put in your office workstations. For example, let's just say instead of a large floor, you had a stream running through it with koi fish, and you had water lilies and flowering plants around that, and you had aromatic plants following that. And where you had to get to workstations, you'd have little bridges that you could watch, little handmade decorative bridges you can walk over. And then in this, around the walls, you had living walls where you have plants that are freshening the air, taking pollutants out of the air, taking carbon dioxide out of the air, and giving you more oxygen. And with the aromatic plants and hanging plants, with a koi in the stream, you'd have a magical work environment. Now, that is something they haven't done, but something that should be done. And finally, is cell phone addiction on the horizon? This is from Baylor University, and they published in the Journal of Behavioral Addictions. Quote, the word addiction is commonly associated with alcohol and drugs, But a new study by researchers from Baylor University in Waco, Texas, suggests a new form of dependence is becoming an increasing concern, cell phone addiction. The study of high school students found that 60% say they may be addicted to their cell phones, and some say they became agitated if they're not by their cell phone. Well, quote, "That's astounding," said a professor, James Robert, at Baylor. "As cell phone functions increase, addictions to the seemingly indispensable piece of technology become an increasingly realistic possibility." Quote, "Cell phones may wind up being an escape mechanism from their classrooms. For some, cell phones in class may provide a way to cheat," according to the professor. Well, as a teacher, as a professor, for a long time, I don't allow any distractions in my classroom. If you need to be distracted, you're out of that classroom, and because it shows disrespect. So you can leave your phone outside the class. Otherwise, why even have a class? If you can't do something at least with the intent of learning and growing from it, then you're just going through some pro forma ritualized process. At the end of that, you neither have benefited the student, the system, or the teacher. So just ban cell phones from the room. And if a student gets all upset and immediately runs out to find someone to give them a hug and then has to go through psychological counseling, probably 3,000 milligrams of morphine to calm them down, get their parents on the phone, the parents come over and say, "How dare my precious, beautiful, and completely flawless child has been deprived of something that's so important to them. It's like taking their heart out of their chest. How dare you? You shouldn't be teaching here." Then just realize you're in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people, and it's never going to work. And that's why a lot of teachers are simply saying, "Don't need this anymore. It's just not working." Or you go do a homeschooling where you have control, or you find that institution that's not afraid to tell the cupcake generation, "We're not going to become as undisciplined, unfocused, and insensitive to the issues as you are. So find another institution." But something has to give there, because, wow, how can a teacher possibly compete when there's a constant distraction and disrespect in the classroom? Maybe all the teachers in America at every institution, every level, should simply go on strike and stay on strike. Not against the students, against the parents of these students. When are we going to realize that you got little Frankensteins because someone created them? Give some of that responsibility to the parents. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Now, before we go to a commentary, I wanted to play you an audio clip about how the government is now. And by the way, the government, when I'm talking about the government, I'm talking about the Justice Department, I'm talking about Congress, the White House, and the DEA, want to make the oil that is actually very beneficial for helping people, especially with brain cancer, seizures, lung cancer, epilepsy, and that's based upon good science, a Schedule I drug, making it virtually impossible for a lot of people to be able to use. So why is the agency harming tens of thousands of families? And what authority do we as parents and the citizens have to finally say no? Listen in to this, please.
Well, what the heck is the DEA doing? CBD oil, the oil used by tens of thousands of people to treat childhood epilepsy, Crohn's disease, and multiple other medical conditions, is now a Schedule I drug. Why this move is completely wrong and the consequence of it in a reality check you won't see anywhere else. Well, it was a move that happened quietly but has enormous ramifications. The DEA has reclassified CBD oil as a Schedule I drug. Specifically, here's what they did. Marijuana, which is correctly called cannabis, is already a Schedule I drug. That status means that the drug, according to the federal government, has no medical use or value, which is provably untrue, and is highly addictive, also provably untrue. Now, with that Schedule I status, cannabis is lumped together with drugs like heroin, which actually have no medical value, and those are highly addictive. So what exactly is CBD oil? Well, inside of a cannabis plant, there are 400-plus ingredients, including dozens of different kinds of cannabinoids, which can be extracted as oil. CBD is a particular kind of cannabinoid oil, and unlike THC, the chemical that can give you a high when it's smoked, CBD is not psychoactive. That's really important. It means it does not have the ability to get you high. Earlier this year, I spoke with a local mom whose little son, Hawk, takes CBD oil for medical purposes.
Our doctor came into the room and he just looked at me and you can't read a neurologist's face because they're so, you know, sort of
stoic.
That's a good word for it. He said, well, I'll tell you this. He said, the brain waves have calmed down. He said, even the background waves have calmed down. There's no more hard spikes, which are called hypsarrhythmia. He said, I would consider this 1,000 times better. And he just looked at me and said, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it.
Well, candidly, that little boy, Hawk, his life is being saved by CBD oil. And Hawk is not alone. He is one of hundreds of children right here in Georgia, tens of thousands of them around the nation, who depend on CBD oil to help control serious issues such as seizures. Children who suffer from epilepsy, they have seen results where they've gone from having 300 seizures a week down to only 2 or 3 just by eating 1 to 2 drops of oil a day. CBD is saving lives. So is THCA, the acidic form of THC, and THC oil. So why did the DEA feel the need to make this distinction? Well, essentially, the DEA created a new category of drugs, specifically for cannabis, called marijuana extracts. In short, the DEA is clarifying that cannabis isn't just illegal, but any naturally occurring oil extracted from that natural plant, they say has no medical value and is highly addictive. And that is absolutely untrue. And to see how untrue, consider the fact that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services holds a patent on CBD and cannabinoids. I've shown you this before, but U.S. patent 6630507 lists cannabinoids and as antioxidants and neuroprotectants. HHS holds the patent on using CBD and other cannabinoids for the purpose of treating Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autoimmune diseases like Crohn's, and even HIV. So what you need to know is that once again, for the DEA to claim that CBD and other cannabis extracts have no medical value, while HHS holds a patent on those same extracts as medicine, is beyond ludicrous. But what's more, the DEA doesn't even have the authority to do this. In this case, the DEA is trying to create a new category of dangerous drug simply because some bureaucrat has decided that the oil from this plant should be illegal to possess. And that is an authority the DEA doesn't have. The agency is tasked with enforcing the law, not creating or expanding them. That's reality check. Let's talk about that.
Well, I believe that behind all this would be the pharmaceutical industry that has drugs that are functionally worthless and very expensive, billion-dollar drugs, for these same conditions. And they don't want to see a natural, inexpensive, non-toxic substance like the cannabinoid oils used instead of their toxic drugs. And they have the ability to bring pressure inside the FDA and the CDC and the National Institutes of Health and through the White House, and they control the press. That's what's really behind this. But just something we should be aware of. Now, when you look at a country that is considered sovereign, such as Libya, and you hear all the justifications that we use, mainly the administration, plus David Cameron, that little buffooned idiot who was prime minister, with the intellect of a toad, who ran Great Britain, a country of dubious and distinctively racist background that has never had to pay reparations for the damage they've done to hundreds of millions of people in China with the Opium Wars and India, including the Bengal genocide. And for those of you who think that Winston Churchill had anything, he was a complete sociopath, yet he is considered the most popular person in British history. That tells you something about their knowledge of what he actually did. He was responsible for causing between 3 to 5 million deaths, starvation, when they actually had the food. But you take all that aside, they're always in on every dirty thing being done, including Libya. Now, Sarkozy, this little diminutive runt from France, who should be given no credibility as a human being, let alone someone running a country, but after all, it's France, so I'm not surprised of all they've done. And I'm going to do an expose in the next 6 days about, I'm going to take a real look, an honest historical look at how bad these countries of power are, from Germany and in Belgium, France, England, United States, and Australia, and show you what they've actually done to how many people over what period of time, and the fact they've never been held accountable, and they should be. So before you praise them and their leaders, like Margaret Thatcher, understand the legacy that they bring. And I'm not one of those people who accept the fact that you were smart enough, clever enough, to steal an asset, that somehow you deserve the respect that comes with that asset. Even in Pacifica, I cannot tell you the disdain I have for people who have reputation undeserved by their ability to privatize assets. People do it. Nations do it. Corporations do it. Should we just sit by and think, oh, well, what can we do? So when it comes to a country like Libya, the most technologically advanced country of the 54 nations in Africa, that had the longest life expectancy, the most amount of rights for women, the highest standard of living, the highest health care, the best educational system, 88% literacy, the highest in the entire Middle East, including Africa, and higher than the United States, with more than 10,000 local community groups that decided all local rules and laws, their democracy in Libya under Gaddafi. And forget, set aside Gaddafi as a person. You can dislike him or his personality or his ability for, you know, narcissism or megalomania, whatever you choose. I look at what a person's country and their citizens are benefiting or not. We went in there because we were told lies. We were told that Gaddafi was killing his own citizens in Benghazi. It turned out that was not true. The people were killing people in Benghazi were CIA assets brought in by al-Nusra, which is an offshoot of al-Qaeda, armed by the United States. So we, the United States, along with Great Britain and Italy and Sarkozy and David Cameron, exploited a sovereign nation that represented no threat to anyone, except they wanted the gold denier in all their exchanges and not the dollar. That's the real reason they were taken down. So we took the best and made it the worst.
New Jersey-based Genie Energy is digging for oil in Syria, even though it clearly violates international law under the Geneva Convention. You don't have to dig too far to find out how this genie clawed out of its oil barrel. First, the reason it violates international law. Genie Oil has been granted permits to drill in Syria, not by Syria, but by Israel. That's because they're going to dig in the region of Syria known as the Golan Heights, which is occupied by the Israelis now. That occupation itself violates international law, and the drilling specifically violates the annex to the Fourth Geneva Convention. So Israel's right to dig there is hotly contested, and yet that's exactly what's happening with Genie Oil. Now for the reasons they're getting away with it. Heading up the effort is a man named Effi Itim. He's a former Israeli military commander who has said, in an actual speech, "We cannot be with all these Arabs, and we cannot give up the land, because we have already seen what they do there. Some of them may be able to stay under certain conditions, but most of them will have to go." So this anti-Arab Israeli is heading the charge for Genie Oil to drill in Syria. He makes for a powerful force to drive the drilling forward, but his cohorts are even more powerful. Because Genie Oil investors include none other than Dick Cheney, Rupert Murdoch, Lord Jacob Rothschild, ex-CIA Director James Woolsey, ex-Secretary of the Treasury Larry Summers, ex-Governor of New Mexico Bill Richardson, and other ex-members of American government. They are all invested in Genie Oil, and they all stand to profit big time for drilling in the already ravaged Syria. So it should come as no surprise that the project is moving along nicely. Genie just finished the flow testing phase and is now analyzing samples from their drilling site. So, instead of putting money and food and help into Syria, these Western billionaires and their government cohorts are taking oil and money out of Syria. Apparently, there will be no putting this greedy genie back into its barrel. Tonight, let's talk about that.
By the way, I'll be starting I'll have a new program on the air called Fake News, the reality behind the headlines. I'll announce when that's coming on. Now I'd like to share some insights that hopefully can be used by many of the 100 million people who declare themselves independent, who are sick of the system, who realize how utterly corrupt the entire corporatocracy is, whether it's Republican or Democrats are irrelevant, whether it's Trump or Clinton in office is really of no significance because they're both going to be honoring those who have all the power. I want to go through the idea of what then does a progressive value stand for. Now, here are some progressive core values. Freedom from undue government interference, including freedom of association, freedom of religion, and freedom of speech. You may not like the speech, but we should have the right to speak. Freedom to live a fulfilling and secure life with economic security and opportunity. Political equality regarding faith, race, gender, sexual orientation. Personal responsibility for each other's benefits, because that helps the common good of society. Public interest of the things that we all can share in common instead of privatizing those assets, whether they're lakes or national parks or national state parks. Responsibility includes ecological, environmental, and social sustainability. For example, you would close down any Coke factory if it could not modify to stop its pollution. And you should not allow pollution within any area that where that pollution can affect aquifers, the air, or people living in that vicinity. After all, the planet is all of our homes. Therefore, we must take care of what we do with it in a very conscious way. So what can we do? Something we can individually and collectively do instead of just being angry at the system. I'm not angry at the system. I'm just dismissive of it because I see how incompatible with life everything in power is today. So something as simple as we should be assured that we no longer have a bail-in, that our 401ks are saved and they're protected. Our retirement money is completely secure. The way you do that is by restoring the Glass-Steagall Act and eliminating the law that Obama signed, the bail-in law. The way it stands now, all of the worst of human nature, the equity partners, the speculators, the hedge fund managers, these are the great and minor white sharks looking for nosebleeds. They have absolutely no moral compass whatsoever. Now, if you met them on a one-to-one basis, if you had dinner with them, you might not see how they really operate or what their philosophy is. But when you see how they're going for their target, it would be like a lion killing every single thing in its path, even though it's not hungry. But that's not what the lion does, but that's what they do. So they should not have the right to get their money out of bad investments because we, the public, are bailed in using our savings accounts, our checking accounts, our business accounts, and that's right now what the law says they can do. We should have no trading and hedging of commodities and necessities essential for life, meaning you should not be able to privatize the water or the energy sources. These should be held in common. You should have no more bailouts of banks or corporations. If they fail, you should take them through our structured bankruptcy proceedings to deconstruct them. You also should have a universal human values that are taught in our educational system that are not now, and act first and foremost with health of the environment in mind. Clean, renewable energies that leave the smallest carbon footprint and don't endanger people's health. Nuclear dangers, coal, hydroelectric, all these danger. But let them stop hydrofracking, the so-called mythological clean coal, offshore drilling. Instead, go to offshore, go to wave power, and also the bladeless wind power, solar, and geothermal. We have thousands, we have more than 12,000 giant geothermal streams that could heat whole cities. We should cease all fossil fuel subsidies. We should also repeal Citizens United immediately. We should have no private entity should be regarded as a corporation, or as a person, meaning no corporation should be protected. We also should, if you want to stop all major crimes against humanity, if it can be shown that any corporation, their board of directors, their administrators, acted with knowledge that what they were going to do would be damaging, rescind their charter and hold them personally accountable with criminal charges. If you took away a charter, you would bankrupt the company. If you put the people running the company in prison, now I'm not saying for mistakes. Mistakes happen. I'm saying when it was with malice aforethought. Repeal the Patriot Act. Repeal the National Defense Authorization Act. No more trading with any organization or country orchestrated by corporations and private industries. Increase the minimum wage of $15, preferably to $20, to keep with the true living wage noted by the Economic Policy Institute. Audits of all major institutions. The Federal Reserve should be abolished. The Defense Department should be cut by 80%. Homeland Security eliminated. The CIA eliminated. 16 of the 17 intelligence agencies eliminated. Completely. Dramatic reductions of all military expenditures. Close the bases down. We don't need them. And immediately start a national and then worldwide decrease nuclear arsenal. Cease military threats to China. They're no threat to us or Russia. Russia is not a threat to us, but there are people who would like us to believe they are. They are not. Stop all trade with Saudi Arabia or any country that has been shown to be harboring, supporting, financing, or protecting or arming terrorists. That means that Israel, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait, and Jordan, all would be no longer able to do any business with us. That would bankrupt them, which they deserve. Then maybe let the people have a Robespierrean moment, take back power. Ban all capital punishment. Start reducing private prison systems. Close them up. Restore pre-Clinton prison programs such as education, and no prison should be used for slave labor. Expand Social Security. After all, Social Security has nothing to do with the government, either the state, federal, or local. They don't put a penny into it, yet they've been borrowing trillions of dollars starting with Reagan, and we shouldn't allow that. The Social Security Trust Fund should remain with no capacity for any governmental agency at any time to withdraw funds from it. We should have universal health care as a human right. We should have taking all the profit out of medicine. We should fully support medical doctors by paying their entire education and giving them a good living wage at the beginning of their internship and residency. But at the same time, since we're giving them a free education and they have no debt, then they shouldn't be able to charge outrageous prices. If you want to make profits, do so in the private sector, but not in healthcare. And if we did that, we would save about $2 trillion a year out of the $3.5 trillion we now spend. Restore federal health agencies as public entities free of all corporate interest. And then allow real science and real medicine to come into those institutions, which now it's only corporate science. Start a national program that promotes from early age prevention. Things such as cooking and gardening and where your food comes from should be taught from kindergarten right through to college. We should protect all public lands and wildlife from corporate interest. We should ban all trophy hunting. The Trump sons, who remind me of Beavis and Butthead, and probably have the character to go with it, I don't know who's competing for the crown, either Wayne Newton with his hairdo from Donkashane or Donald Trump. But man, they both need a new stylist. But we should ban all trophy hunting, and yet they like to pose with the innocent animals they've killed. Hey, tell you what, Beavis and Butthead, the two Trump sons, if you're really tough, if you're really smart, if you're really hip, then show it. All right? Go after a lion, but with no weapons. Let's see how tough you are. Go after a cougar. Go after the animals that you have no problem in the safety of, you know, a truck with a high-powered rifle and 16 other people standing there in case you miss a shot. Go after them. Let's see how tough you are then. What kind of people we have in this country is just beyond me. We also have to have the founding of a national health prevention program. We have none in America. We have to have a national federal food project. And one of the things we could do is we could begin by urban areas, turning over large areas of urban areas to community gardens to support the community needs for food. I believe this is very easy to do. I know it's easy to do. I used to do this up at the Fertiller Farm, upstate New York. People would come up on the weekends, and anything that they wanted, they got to take home with them, and people would come for church. The guy told me, hey, Gary, I'm a member of a Baptist church out in Brooklyn, and another person came who was a member of a Caribbean church. Could we take a bunch of stuff? I said, take as much as you want. They'd take a truckload back, and it would feed the people for the whole week from the congregation who were poor. What if we did that in every single area? Instead of having blighted, gutted buildings, we tore down those buildings, or if they were rehabilitated, you can do community gardens on roofs, you can have food production inside, you could have community centers. But also, why not go back to the state and the federal government giving 100 acres and a farm, seed, organic heirloom, and equipment to anyone wanting to do new homesteading, like the old 40 acres and a mule? Now do it where you get 2 to 3 million Americans moving back to the farms. And the deal is, we're giving you all this. You can't sell it. It's a gift from the American public. It stays in the commons. But you have an obligation. 25% of your entire yield must go to local food banks to support their needs. So we're giving you a right to keep the profits from 75% of what you grow and sell, but 25% has to be given back. Again, sharing in the commons. Simple solutions work. We need to expand. We need to move towards universal health care as a human right. We also need to shut down all of our nuclear power plants. We need a national reforestation project. Also major reform of public airwaves. Return public media to the people. Break up all of the trusts and the monopolies. Get rid of the Electoral College and enact campaign finance reform. Make it against law for any money to go into any campaign. Keep all election cycles to 3 months. Anybody who wants to run for office will submit a form that allows all their different policies and issues to be put up online. And then there's lotteries drawing where people have a chance to debate and share their positions. And then over a period of 3 months, you keep bringing it down till you have your finalists. And that way it's truly a a democratic election. So no matter what a person means, if they have good ideas, they have a chance of getting elected. Free public education, no tuition at any state, local school. However, for private institution, well, you charge whatever you feel the market will bear, and those who want that education and can afford it will take it. If not, there's a good quality public education. Forgive all student debt. Put a moratorium on all home foreclosures. Repeal every bankruptcy law. Guarantee internet freedom. Now, we have two major threats that are being presented, among many, to the American public based upon Trump. This is a draconian, totalitarian regime that we're now seeing. I believe that we will see a loss of civil liberties and the freedom of speech and the right to assembly and protest. I believe that climate change and global warming will accelerate because they're living in denial and the people they put in positions of power are already global warming denialists. I believe that we have to have a look back at our best presidents. Eisenhower was our last really good conservative president, and his values would be considered very liberal. Carter was the last liberal president, but FDR was the best. We should be putting our focus upon third parties and independents, being elected at town, city, and state levels rather than the federal government. We should emphasize local community grassroots networking and planning and projects. We should get the energy going on anti-fracking, anti-nuclear, anti-GMO, anti-vaccine, anti-big oil, anti-big coal, anti-big pharma. We should put pressure on institutions to divest from immoral investments. We should have all investments, all institutional investments, taken out of any country that's been shown to engage in apartheid or in any abuse of women. Hence, almost 90% of all countries. Ironically, Syria would not be one of them that we would no longer be in. Put money into local banks and credit unions. Take your money out of all corporate banks. Buy local and boycott Amazon.com. Remove ourselves from reliance on big tech services that work with the national security agencies such as Google, Facebook, and switch to more community and socially friendly services and browsers and search engines. Support music and the arts as a means of civil activism. Community reforestation projects. And embrace a spiritual practice and connect with spiritual communities for more enlightened support. Get back to urban farming and beekeeping. Restoration of deserted buildings for low-income housing, extra education at all levels, and bring in natural and personal health and environmental and social development issues into the curriculums. Reintroducing and preparing veterans and prison inmates back into society. Community projects of organizing and political activism, children and youth programs on practical skills rather than just standard school subjects. Increase our local community food banks. We have more than 10 million square feet in New York City alone of unused space, federal, state, and local, that should all be turned over to housing for the homeless, for families. Now I'm seeing that they're spending $600 a night for people to be in a, you know, rundown hotel. They're being exploited. We, the people, are paying for that. Why not just rehabilitate buildings that the government owns so you don't have to pay any of that? You just pay for your basic construction, and then within that, you have monitors, you have security, you have a family unit, you have a single unit, single male, single female, and so you give them the services they need to help them. There was once a workers' bill of rights, which included the right to organize and form unions, to bargain collectively and negotiate terms and conditions. They've been on the downsides to now where they're anywhere between 7 and 9%. It used to be 51%, and that's when we had a good quality standard of living if we were middle class. We should be free of discrimination in the workplace. And there's a big difference. Liberals use tax money to improve society. Progressives use tax money to improve society, but also use power of government to make large institutions play by a set of rules that improve society and not a public-private partnership that burdens the public with the debt and prioritizes and privatizes the profits. Liberals give Big Pharma a lot of cash because they want to give medicines to the poor. Progressives enforce price regulations to force down the cost of drugs and then ask, show me the proof this drug has any efficacy or safety to begin with. When it comes to government, the main difference between conservative and liberals' values are conservatives focus upon personal responsibility, limited government, equality, and equal opportunity are achieved through the free market. If you have a perfect market, that works. We don't. If you have a perfect government, that can help. We don't. We have the worst of both. We have the worst of profiteering within the free market system and the worst of a government that's been completely captured by the private interest. So it doesn't work anymore. Conservatives believe government should only provide people with the freedom to pursue their own goals. Progressives believe the government is responsible for alleviating social ills and protecting civil liberties and human rights. After all, if you are conservative and you believe that a person has a right to achieve what they want, are you assuming that all people are starting from the same point with the same advantages? If not, then it's a game system. And it's a game system. So therefore, you should, through compassion and through social position and government policy, make sure that everyone has an opportunity. But we should be shamed on ourselves for having 18 million children go to bed hungry each day, and not a single hedge fund manager, nor anyone on Wall Street, nor anyone in government, nor anyone in the media give a damn about those 18 million, because they're not going to bed hungry, nor are their children. So if you think all poor people are lazy, then friend, you've spent way too much time in your ivory towers or on Madison Avenue or on Wall Street. Come walk the streets with me and I'll show you the people who are working 2 to 3 jobs and still can't make it. Also, when it comes to conservatives, conservatives believe that that government should only empower people to solve their own problems, where the progressives believe the government should guarantee that no one is left in need. So that's just some of the basics, but not all by any means. And there are positions that conservatives take that are beneficial to all in society, as there are those from liberals. The conservatives that I would value, the strength in the family, the emphasis on locality and community building, on self-control, not self-indulgence, and not gratification of desires. The importance on character building, the importance on discipline, the importance on individual charity, teaching self-help, also frugality and efficiency. Belief that we shouldn't have high taxes. One of the reasons we have higher taxes, by the way, is because we have so many corporations that are profiting from friends in government giving them contracts that do not benefit us. If we gave one flat income tax or one flat corporate tax, let's say of 15 to 20%, but everyone who had a business had to pay it with no deductions, you could eliminate the IRS, and we would be saving $1 trillion and getting $1 trillion. It's a huge difference. Balancing the budget's important. And also, traditionally, conservatives were not interventionists. They were not into regime change. But we haven't seen that in a long time. And many of the progressive values is that help all the people within a community, equality in material conditions and opportunities, basic to our values, in housing, in healthcare and education, even recreational opportunities. Now, I don't have time for more, but those are some of the things that I believe are important for us who are going into the new year, so we do not feel helpless and realize that there was a time when real conservatives and real liberals worked together. And they had a lot of common themes. And when they did work together, society was a safer, better, more productive, happier, and healthier place to live. What we have today is not a democracy, nor do we have values equal rights, any of us who speak out are considered enemies of the state. We are watched, monitored, we are threatened, and we shouldn't feel that we do not have the same rights to speak our mind without repercussions. We have a new form of McCarthyism, and the media is playing the heavy hand that it once did in that McCarthyism today. Now they want to censor our information. They want to tell us what is real and what is fake. The purveyors of fake now want us to believe that they can do anything representing real. So this is a wonderful time to be alive, because we're going to see more changes than ever before. Not that all the changes will be positive nor good, but from what does fail and breaks down and collapses, we can rebuild something new and constructive in its place. So for about 35 to 40 million Americans, we have more than enough who are empowered, educated, and aware of the real issues and what is not fake to make the next 2 to 3 years our turning point, shifting the paradigm. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to tonight at 7 o'clock. Wow, it's going to be a heavy-duty program at 7 on Progressive Commentary Hour. Have a nice day, everyone.